6 minutes after the hour of 12 noon, and it's Monday, April 18th, 2022. Dave Krieger with you for hour number two of the Power Hour. Thank you so much for joining us. The economy, of course, of late seems to be occupying everyone's forefront. And you know that because everybody has to go shopping. Everybody has to fill up their tank. And with everything that's going on right now, including the latest reports of what I read in the last hour in our news segment, we invite your comments, 844-769-2944. And the reason we do, and this is not just here to promote, you know, the 10% off that we're having on North American Urban Spice products and the 10% off Transderma Minerals products at the Power Mall, including magnesium oil and precious prills, magnesium oil, of which I use, and the North American Urban Spice Nuke Protect that we're going to be talking about this week. But see, the economy also is stifling our growth, especially with all the money being poured into the money supply to pay for a lot of the problems that not we the people have created, but the current administration. And addressing that is a seasoned economic policy expert, author, president, and founder of the Market Institute. He began developing his expertise in finance and tax by working for the chairman of the Finance Committee and then going on to be a legislative analyst focused on tax, immigration, labor issues in a governor's office in 2007. He was named Deputy Legislative Director for the National Center for Policy Analysis. This is a think tank dedicated to finding free market alternatives to government regulation. After his time at NCPA, he was president of Entrepreneurs for Growth, Capitol Hill education program that educated Hill staff on entrepreneurship. He then founded and served as the Executive Director for Free Market Medical Association. In 2010, he founded the Market Institute, serves as its president to date. He's authored the book Profit Motive, What Drives the Things We Do, and is a frequent voice appearing in the outlets like the Washington Examiner, Forbes, Investors Business Daily, and many more. Charles Sauer, welcome to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me on. This is going to be great.
Oh, it is. It is because, I mean, people out there, and I'm hearing it from all of our listeners out there, they're feeling it in the pocketbook. And when they do, things in politics seem to change. And, of course, the topic I was looking at was this in my show notes. Biden veers to Jimmy Carter's economic left. So do many Republicans. And, of course, you know, Real Clear Markets, you're an author in that. Give me the I always ask authors about the 40,000-foot view. How about the 400-foot view? Because we the people are getting a little tired of this, don't you think?
I think that all of us currently have that 400-foot view. I know my wife came back from the grocery store this week, and I'm usually the one that goes, and she was like, do you know how much this cost us this week? And it was an unbelievable number. It was just something I had kind of stopped paying attention to because, you know, you kind of have to get food. And so I just stopped looking because we were getting the same things kind of week in and week out. And it is a number that made me pause myself and start thinking about not just what it means for our budget, but when you start looking at the economy and if everybody's dealing with those prices, what it means for them. And it means that, you know, they're going to be asking for more money at their jobs and their employers are going to be pressed even harder. And we're going to see that ripple through the economy. And that's something that we should all pay attention to. But as you pointed out, with President Biden in charge right now, he's not doing anything to address these problems. And in fact, he's doing the opposite and making many of these problems worse. And to give an example, he was recently in Iowa giving a speech, and it was ostensibly on its face, it was a speech about the way that the administration was going to deal with inflation. However, all he did was repurpose a speech where he was pitching Build Back Better, which does nothing but harm inflation. But he just repurposed it and used, this is going to help us fight inflation at the end of every comment. So not only are we all seeing these problems now and it's hurting us at the kitchen table, but the administration is running the opposite way while holding their head in the sand. And so it's something we should talk about. It's something we need to be aware of, and it's something that needs to be addressed sooner rather than later.
Now, is it also true that he is proposing a protectionist attitude about buying American, or is he trying to alter that as a means of fighting inflation? It seems like he's the one that actually started this when he cut the Keystone Pipeline and everything else. I mean, I don't believe for one minute that because of the fact we've been sanctioned by not getting gas or whatever the case out of Russia and whatever 3% of our oil, I really don't believe that that's what's actually caused the spike in gas prices. Do you?
Well, this is what caused the recent actions are what caused kind of the double spike, right? So we were already spiking the economy with the canceling of the Keystone Pipeline, the way that the administration cut off gas leases, the stances and everything the administration was doing were policies that were going to raise prices with or without Ukraine. And then when you talk about sanctions, the one thing that Biden, and he's trying to push this off, is the Putin price increase, which just isn't true because it's President Biden that's decided to go defend Ukraine. And that could be a good decision. It could be a bad decision. I don't think he's actually stood up and made the case for it either way, but that has further spiked everything. And when you talk about for a sanction to work, it has to hurt us. So that's just the start of showing that the administration isn't being truthful when they talk about the economics, the economic effects of their policies. But you're exactly correct. When he was looking at policies and what they were going to do, every single policy that he did raised it prices for America. If you look at the State of the Union, he talked about the Buy America idea. And Buying America is great, but one thing that Buying America doesn't do is reduce prices. It increases prices just on its face. Other countries have cheaper labor. They have less regulations. They can hire younger labor. There's reasons why a product bought from China can be bought and delivered here and still be cheaper than something bought in America. Now, if you buy in America, yeah, it helps out labor. Yes, it might help out other things, but it does cost a single mom in Illinois more money to get the same products if she's buying everything in America. It's not efficient and it's not cheap, and it does help further drive this inflation problem.
Well, so, but I mean, the thing is I'm looking at labor, and I'm talking about unions is what has helped drive up the cost of production for American goods, as well as the administration's insistence that they want to, as part of Build Back Better, they want to hike taxes on every sector of the economy. And the thing is also, Biden administration just announced that it's going to resume plans to facilitate oil and gas drilling on federal lands, but they're only going to make 144,000 acres available for leasing, 80% less than the 733,000 that had been previously under evaluation. I mean, what's that about?
Well, you know, and I know that if they change what they're doing now, those changes aren't going to take effect for a year, two, or five. And what happened is when the Biden administration came in, the oil and gas industry knew that there was going to be changes. So they were trying to do everything they could to lock up as many leases and start as many projects as they could. But the Biden administration cut off that increased production almost right at the beginning. And so right now they're playing catch up. We saw not just oil is one example of this, but we saw the left's insistence on medical regulations before COVID. They kept trying to have more and more regulations. And when COVID hit, everybody saw it as a problem and they rolled back the regulations. Well, there was still a delay. Oil is going to take longer because oil and energy and drilling and all of the regulations that are still in place mean that there's even a longer time lag between when the administration changes it. But you're exactly correct on the unions. I talked about the State of the Union. I talked about his speech in Iowa. But there's one where he goes and he's talking to the unions, and he stops several times in his speech to the unions and says, look, I've proven it in the past. I'm not going to do anything that you guys oppose. What I'm going to do in the White House is represent you, the unions. And that doesn't mean saving Americans money. That doesn't mean making it cheaper for us to survive around the kitchen table. When a union is involved, prices are higher. That's what the union does. They raise prices so that the union employees can be paid more money. I mean, that is their job. It makes sense that they're doing that, but it doesn't do anything to reduce prices for normal Americans.
Well, see, and that's the thing about Buy American that you were just discussing, Charles, is that all of this is relative to him getting union money to the Democrats for the upcoming elections in November. And speaking of which, as far as the overall state of the economy and the upcoming elections, what's your take on what you think's going to happen here?
Well, I mean, I think it's going to be bad for the Democrats. I mean, if we have a Biden, if we look at what President Biden's been doing and we look at what his administration's been doing, they said that the inflation was just a passing thing. We now know, most of us knew that it wasn't a passing thing back in November, December when we were talking about it. You add Ukraine into the mix and things have gotten worse. As we see the prices start increasing for us, everybody is getting more and more upset, and we are just seeing kind of the first level of price increases. What we haven't seen yet come through the economy are what increased gas prices mean to the creation of the food and everything that we buy. Right now, we're just paying for the increased transportation costs of getting things to stores or for delivery. But as the prices work their way through the economy, we're going to see more inflation and more price increases just for businesses to break even. And so what we're looking at is likely devastation for the Democrats. We're pretty sure in the House right now looking at the next election, and I can't see that helping Biden out when we look out, 2.5 years from now.
Right, but I mean, in the Senate, do you see a major shift there, or you only see maybe 2 or 3 seats shifting the balance of power in the Senate?
I mean, it's going to be interesting in the Senate, but all we need is 2 or 3 seats, right? And so the House is settled. I believe that the Republicans are going to take over that with full force. The Senate is a little bit different monster. You only have a third of the members coming up for election each year. I know that there's a couple of people at risk this year, so the Republicans have a chance. I mean, that's, 33 members? I think we have a few retiring, so we might add a few more into that. I'm not exactly sure what the end makeup of the Senate's going to look like, but I know that Democrats are going to be fighting for their lives. We already see it in the way that they're pursuing legislation on Capitol Hill. We're seeing less of AOC. We're seeing more of Nancy Pelosi. So they're trying to moderate themselves so that they can actually get more of the moderate votes. At the same time, again, that's why Biden's pandering to the unions. The unions are his get-out-the-vote operation. If Biden doesn't have the unions, then he doesn't have the election prowess that he's had before. And if he can't get them to show up for other people, then the Democrats are going to be devastated across the board, meaning fairly large majorities in the House and a reasonable majority in the Senate. There's not going to be a 60-vote threshold, more than likely.
Interesting. 844-769-2944, the number to call here on the Power Hour if you want to weigh in on any of the topic matter that we are talking about right now. My problem with the topic of Biden veering to Jimmy Carter's economic left, I mean, this guy at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue is a moron with a mental acuity of a 2-year-old, and his sidekick giggles. I mean, they can't even make a complete sentence. My whole thing is somebody else is calling the shots for him. And when you have all these Republicans lining up and catering to the left and voting along not just party lines, but siding with Democrats on a lot of these policies, and then you get Kevin McCarthy saying, well, I don't know about impeachment. I think that's a little politically motivated. And he stands to become Speaker of the House. I seriously want to see Biden and Harris gone, and that would make McCarthy president. I mean, do you even see something like that happening?
I don't see something like that happening. And I don't think that that's necessarily good for the union. We haven't seen Biden is slow. He's always been a crazy uncle, but he was voted president as the crazy uncle, right? And if you listen to his speeches, he's definitely getting tired as president, and there are issues there. I don't think that they reach the level of impeachment. I don't think that we've seen that threshold crossed. But look, where you're right and where I fully agree is that not only is Biden to the left of Jimmy Carter, and I have to say, because I think it's an interesting thing just to watch, but if you look at what Jimmy Carter, his 1978 State of the Union speech, the way that I always thought of Jimmy Carter is, you know, the malaise president, he was just not a very good president. But if you look at his 1978 State of the Union, he was more conservative in that speech than maybe even Ronald Reagan in his State of the Unions. And part of that had to do with the fact that he was now competing in 1978 with the Iron Lady across the pond. And so he could see the world changing. But in the end, Jimmy Carter deregulated rail, he deregulated trucking, he deregulated air, and really got the economy back going. And that was by getting the government out of the way. And Reagan did good things when he was president, but was able to benefit from some of the changes that Carter made. Which brings us back to where the right is now. A lot of the right, if we look at Ted Cruz or Josh Hawley, they're actually moving towards regulation and supporting more regulation of our businesses. And that is following the AOC, the Biden, the Harris train. And that is the opposite direction that we want to go. It's the opposite direction that Reagan went. It's the opposite direction than even Jimmy Carter went. And less government is going to give us a better economy instead of more government.
No doubt. Well, I'll tell you what, Charles, the phones are starting to stack up now. Tom in Michigan, you're on the phone with Charles Sauer. Go for it.
Yeah, I'll try to be real quick. The big puzzle, you know, I like the puzzles with the big pieces, but in the big pieces is back in around 1895, the corporate income tax was knocked down and, you know, it caused huge monopolies. I know I went to your website and you really like the antitrust. You appear to be, you know, really, really working in that area. And what I'm trying to get at is the income tax, in my opinion, was designed to be antitrust. When in 1916, when the Bruchhaber versus Union Pacific, it was stated that basically confirmed in Staten versus Baltic Mining that the 16th Amendment did not create any new taxing powers. Basically, it was simply to make things that were excises by nature excises, and not to create a whole new tax of class of taxing. Now, what I'm talking about is our government was designed to be getting their money from indirect taxes, things like tariffs and excises, things of that nature. And if you don't want to pay the tax, don't buy the product. And so that, you know, so this is Buy American. I just can't buy it because, like you're saying, it raises prices, but it's supporting the underlying fraud of this income tax that everybody's sweating to the last day today. But if you'd like to comment on that, I'd appreciate it.
Yeah, we appreciate that. Thank you, Tom, for your call. Go ahead, Charles.
I appreciate the call too. One, if you want to look at a good tax system, and I'm not going to promise that it's going to answer all of your questions, but the inflow-outflow tax is the tax system that I support the most. It creates more incentives for us to, it evens the incentives between saving and spending, which is one of the things, if you look at our tax system, the way that it's structured, it just messes up the economy where you're incentivized to spend more money on healthcare instead of saving, or you're incentivized to do things that we might not want to do. So it creates kind of a flat playing field, which is the way that a tax system should be set up. And one of the things, and you didn't talk too much about it, but the corporate tax rate is something that we need to understand as just citizens more, because when the left talks about raising the corporate tax rate, what they're really doing, they want to attack big businesses by taxing them more. But a big business is a big business. They aren't going to absorb those costs. So Lawrence Kotlikoff, one of the top economists of the left, has studies where he says that 100% or almost 100% of corporate taxes are paid by labor. In other words, if you raise taxes on a corporation, they don't pay more taxes. The labor ends up paying those taxes, and that's through either lower wages or less hours. And so we do need a more robust conversation about taxes. I think that at this point we're going to have income taxes, but we do need to look at ways to make our tax system more efficient so that we don't have all of the gamesmanship that goes on by large corporations, all the gamesmanship that goes on by high wealth individuals. That was Reagan's thing, right? He dropped the top tax rate, but he lessened the amount of deductions that people could have so that it was just flat across the board. And that was the whole point of his, I think it was, that was the 86 tax reform bill, was to get rid of those deductions and simplify the system. So I agree we have a problem. I think that there's solutions out there. I think the inflow-outflow tax will probably never pass, but it's a way that we need to understand taxes so that if we do have an opportunity to reform the system, we look towards that.
Yeah, well, the Cato Institute, Charles, just put out an article on the fact that we just need to just simplify the income tax system so that everybody, including the CPAs, can understand it. I know if you, this is a thing. I've been told so many times, Charles, that you give 12 different CPAs your tax return, you're going to get 12 different kinds of returns to file. Scotty in Virginia, you're on the phone with Charles Sauer. What say you?
Thanks for taking my call. I'm going to try to explain this as good as I can. I get really ticked off about this situation. The unions are a whole lot like the EPA. You know, in their day, when it first started, it was a good thing. The union, we don't need it no more. It's just, here's a prime example. Joe Manchin goes and bails out the UMWA the very next day in West Virginia. They're bragging on radio about how many millions of dollars they spent on their little clubhouse at the bank they bought out. And it just pisses me off and chaps my hind end so bad.
I'm sorry about that, Scotty. Charles, we're going to get your answer to Scotty's comment after we get back from the break. 28 minutes after the hour here in the Power Hour. Dave Kriegu, stay with you. We're going to be right back and taking more of your call. Stay with us.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
The Power Hour has been in existence since the turn of the 21st century. It is more critical than ever for you to sign up for our free newsletter and our breaking news. Simply text the word Power Hour to 22828 on your mobile phone or sign up when you visit thepowerhour.com. Our website again is thepowerhour.com or text Power Hour to 22828. Together, our legacy will live on for centuries.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. When talking of great immune support, a line of products comes to my mind. That's North American Urban Spice. We carry the Resvital Calf, Sinew Orega, Oreganol Juice, Pure Lisi, Chaga Max, Collagen Power Plus, Oregarest, Super Strength Oregano Oil, Black Seed, and many more. Support small businesses when you buy from the good guys. Go to thepowermall.com or call 877-817-9829.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Optivita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Except at the hour of 12 noon, Monday, April 18, 2022. Hopefully you had a good Easter. And, of course, North American Urban Spice products you just heard about, 10% off at the Power Mall now, as is Transderma Minerals as well. And we have Charles Sauer on the phone, and we just got a call from Scotty in Virginia and talking about Manchin. I know you've probably been stewing on the answer, Charles. What say you?
Well, I agree. Unions are awful, and the Democrats' support of unions is even worse. But first off, I kind of want to address, because when you work on Capitol Hill and you work in policy, one of the things that you keep coming across is the talking point of unions were good at some point. So I want to give him even another talking point and say that unions were never good. Unions were never the answer. There were employers that were treating labor poorly, but if unions wouldn't have come up, if unions wouldn't have developed, other employers would have started up that treated their employees better. They could have paid them the same amount, even maybe less, and actually just treated them better and outcompeted the people that were treating their employees worse. So I don't think that unions were ever needed. And then when you fast forward to today, it's just crazy what they do. But I want to talk about just for a second the incentives inside the unions and what they end up doing, because we all kind of know it. But one of the things that unions negotiate for are higher healthcare benefits. And the reason they negotiate for higher healthcare benefits is that they're tax deductible for the employee. So what we see is that the unions go into negotiations with the employers. And at some point, the employer says, all right, I'll tell you what, I've got $100 that I can give you for this. And the union has to decide whether that $100 goes to wages or the $100 goes to healthcare, because both ways there are $100 costs to the employer, but that $100, if it goes to the union member's pocket, then gets taxed, so it's less than $100. Let's call it $80 or $90. But if it goes into healthcare, they can see the whole $100. So we end up not just with unions hurting their union members by lowering the amount of money in their pockets and overrunning their healthcare, but they actually mess up the whole healthcare system by having these Cadillac plans out there that don't really provide more healthcare. They just provide more services that don't do anything to provide healthcare. So we have not just the unions that were never needed and never helped their people and weren't helping their people, but when the Democrats support them, they're also hurting other pieces of our economy, which makes things even worse. So I'm exactly with you. They chap me as well, and I think it's something that we need to talk about, and it's something we need to know more about and just go directly at them, especially when politicians talk about supporting unions like Joe Biden talks about supporting unions.
Yeah, well and good. 844-769-2944 is the number to call if you want to chime in here. Charles Sauer is with us. He is the president and founder of Market Institute, and I can tell from the diatribe here, this gentleman, folks, is very well versed in what's going on. He's an author for RealClearMarkets.com. Now, understand the thing that really, I guess I'm not going to use the word chaps my hide, but I just did, was what the pension funds were invested in all of these securities that collapsed. I could not see how people could trust unions any further than they could throw them based on the fact that they bought into the securitization garbage back in the, when they deregulated everything in 1999 and Clinton signed off on the, the Gramm-Leach-Bliley Act, which basically, did away with the, securities regulations and let the banks back into the securities markets. What's your take on that aspect?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things is I'm pro getting the government out of the way of all of these areas in banking and investing so that banks can kind of do what they want to do, right? But if you have a union where you are forced to pay into the union, you're forced to have your retirement in that union, and everything about it is enforced, then the union doesn't have the incentive to necessarily treat you well. They have an incentive to play fast and wild with your money so that they can show that they're getting a better return for you. How much better would it be if these individuals had the money in their account so they could decide, like many of us decide, how risky we want our own retirement to be? But when other people are in control over your money, without repercussions of how they're in control over your money, then their incentive is to play hard and fast. And so when you remove regulations, which they should be removed, banks, investors should be able to, you know, package products how they want to. We just need to be more careful when we're looking at it. But these unions are just bankrupting their members unless the government comes in and bails them out, which is why the bailouts were ridiculous on their face. These are all people that made decisions. The left made decisions to empower the unions, and so they shouldn't have been bailed out. None of that should have happened. But we as a country should also be taking more active engagement in our own retirements and our own savings.
Okay, that makes perfect sense, Charles. Now, your thing on what's going on, I'm seeing an uptick because of the way the economy is these days. I'm starting to see an uptick in foreclosures. What, have you studied any of that, and what's your take on it?
I haven't really looked at it recently. I know that when we looked at some of the previous bubbles and what was going on there, I mean, I think that we saw an uptick in possible foreclosures pre-COVID, and then the laws were passed to help stave those off. So now as those rules are coming off, we're going to see an uptick back in foreclosures. Honestly, if you're like in my neighborhood, everything is going above asking price right now and quickly, and people are aggressively trying to find new houses. So one of the reasons that demand is happening is that supply has been cut down, and there is just kind of a normal foreclosure rate that is going to be increased because it was held off for a while now. But in the end, when people have an opportunity to get into a house, maybe it's cheaper and easier than it should be or what we think should be, but the more that people can start building that wealth, the better off they are as individuals. So I want people to be able to get into houses as easily as possible and for them to be able to make that decision on their own. So we don't need a government that is out looking over and deciding who is responsible enough to buy a house. I think the individual should be doing that, and the bank should be making responsible decisions along the way. But this is, everything's interconnected, right? If you have a government that is looking out over people, there's going to be people that skip through or fit through the loopholes, and then banks are going to find a way to take advantage of that so they can get more money out there faster. And so the less government we have, the more responsibility everybody takes in the chain, and that builds a stronger economy. But the government at the size that it is now is a problem for everybody.
It is. Charles in Ohio, you are on the phone with Charles Sauer. So two Charleses, here you go. We have a Battle of the Charleses. Go ahead, Charles in Ohio. What say you?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I hope you're both well. I just there's so many issues he hit on so quick, and it's so important. But wanted to comment on domestic versus import. The way I see it, I look at all issues, and I mean every factor is going to weigh different for every individual. But the cost of these products coming in is, I see, it's terribly manipulated by at the top, and that's where all the money is going. When they manipulate the price of U.S. currency, but basically when we buy foreign products, we're supporting their enslavement of their society and the unemployment of ours. If we buy more domestic, the costs will be higher, and that's unfortunate. But it makes us, we're living high on the hog on the backs of other people is an important part for me to consider when we are getting these imported goods. And thank you very much.
What do you say, Charles, the other Charles Sauer? That's amazing. You get two Charleses at once. So go ahead and comment on that.
Charles, I wanted to agree with you. We were going to be united as Charleses, but I don't think I can agree with you on this one. Anybody who's being employed is a good thing for them, because unless they're being marched into that work at gunpoint, they're choosing to be there. So when we look overseas, some of these people, like in China, they're coming to these factories and the people talk about them being underpaid. But there's a reason why they're traveling into the cities to work in these factories. And that's because they're making their families better. They are making more money than the average citizen in the country. And therefore, it can help them out. What I think of this is actually other countries just supporting the U.S. And so they're spending their country's money and funneling it towards us by subsidizing their employees or trying to manipulate the cost of the dollar or the value of their money. So, you know, we can think of it as a bad thing. I've always thought of it as a good thing because it's just a way that we're getting cheaper products. And as the economy grows, it's not just that, like lamplighters. As we got new technology that meant that we didn't need lamplighters anymore, it's not like lamplighters just stayed unemployed for the rest of their lives. They found new jobs, they invented new things, and they took up new roles in the economy. So we don't necessarily, like, one of the big things that we import from China is like tissue paper and party supplies. We don't, that might pay some amount of money, but how much more productive can we be if that person is in another job making something like a semiconductor or something that's actually a higher value for our overall economy? So I think that we just need to step back and look and see what the actual effect of these other countries subsidizing their labor is, and understand that that raises our quality of life at really no cost to us. It is costing their country money, and we even get to increase the speed and size of our economy as workers get to move from kind of low-level productive jobs to higher-level productive jobs. And so I really think that trade is one of the most important things that we can look at in our system. And a side note to that is where I think you're right and where I can go with you a little bit is if we look at patents in the U.S., the Obama administration was severely anti-patent. The Trump administration was kind of 50-50, but the guy who was at the head of the patent office was amazing for innovation. And so far in the Biden administration, they've been just about as anti-patent as you can get. Well, I think that the way to make the U.S. economy better is to really invest or strengthen our patent system. It's the only right actually included in the Constitution, only explicit right included in the Constitution. And if we go on the offense and help make America a more innovative country again, then these other countries aren't manufacturing the new innovations, or maybe they do manufacture the new innovations, but the people here that invented it are getting richer. So Again, I think that trade is one of the most important things that we can do. But if we want to go on the offense, we need to look towards innovation in the U.S., and that's patents.
Right. And the thing, I'm going to agree with you on that one, Charles. Now, the other thing, though, about the supply chain, because China is like a major lockdown right now, especially Hong Kong. And the things that I'm looking at as far as supply chain, we had a produce guy from a major supermarket chain here in Texas talking about the fact that the reason there are supply chain issues is because we don't have enough labor to get the goods to market, versus an issue with China where you've got everything stuck in port somewhere and the Biden administration, everybody else blaming all of these shipping companies and people who don't want to work. On the other side, when you've got all these lockdowns, nothing is moving anyway. What's your whole take on the supply chain issue?
So I think the supply chain is an interesting issue, especially now when we talk about realistically historically low unemployment rates. And we still know, I mean, if you go to a hotel or if you go to a restaurant, there's just not enough employees to go around right now. And the question is, where are all of the employees? Where is everybody that was in the economy pre-COVID? Did the economy grow so much that there's so many jobs available now that weren't available before? Were there so many new companies started where there's so many entrepreneurs out of jobs that means that employees aren't available? Do we need to increase the immigration rate so that we can fill these jobs? I think that there's some things that are going to be studied in the U.S. as far as labor is concerned, that are going to last for quite a few years for us moving on. But the supply chain is interesting because the issue is a company okay with being cut off? So pre-pandemic, what we had are companies that were really getting really good at just-in-time stock. Because if you have stock that is just sitting there, it's actually costing your company money. And so what they were doing is they were really good at just getting just enough in to continue serving clients. And so there's two ways to solve this. You can either order enough and it's going to cost your company more money, but then you can kind of wait out supply shortages for short amounts of time. Which they do every year during like Chinese New Year, which is why the effects of COVID actually took a while to kind of come through the economy. But, or is this an incentive and a reason for more U.S. manufacturing to take place? And I think that that's a question that companies are going to ask themselves more over the next few years. I mentioned semiconductors earlier. There's already several large companies that are considering manufacturing semiconductors in the U.S. now so that they don't run into those shortages. So I think what we had happen was an economy that was firing around the world kind of on all cylinders, and then a disruption and people understanding that they were really reliant on an efficient supply chain and that things in the world can affect that supply chain and really harm their businesses. So now I think we're going to see businesses change. I do think we're going to see more manufacturing coming back to the U.S., but it's based on that, not changing any trade rules or anything else, just businesses making decisions based on a need for a more consistent supply chain.
Well, and the thing is that the more this government, because Democrats are notorious for regulations and the Republicans, like you said earlier in the broadcast, Charles, siding with the Democrats on creating more regulations, a lot of this, I think, is going to stifle a growth, and that's something we can talk about. Dave in Virginia, you are on the phone with Charles Sauer. What say you?
Yes, sir, right there. I'd like to kind of take a step back there for a minute right there, and I'm kind of curious about something here about you know, taxing these factories and all this other stuff right there, and they'll just pass it down the line. I don't think that is really an issue right there because, you know, like people out here like doing construction work, they might make 15, maybe 20,000 a year right there, and they might have to pay like 25, you know, $3,000 or something like that. But, you know, like a CEO of a company right there, I'm not talking about his company. I'm talking about the money that he brought in. And, you know, is he paying like 20% or like, you know, the guy making $15,000-$20,000 a year out of his income, not out of his business income, but is he paying that kind of money out of his income? Or, you know, what's the deal with that? You know, I'm just kind of curious about that. That's all I got to say. Thanks, Dave.
All right. Appreciate it, Dave in Virginia. Thank you. Charles, your response.
Well, I think it's always a good question to ask, and that's one of the reasons why I went after the corporate tax rate, because the left always talks about two things. They like having a progressive tax system, which is what you talked about, asking a question about. But we currently have a progressive tax system, which says that as you make more money, your tax rate goes up. So, man, I'm just filing my taxes and the numbers just went out of my head. But at the top rate, let's just call it 25%. I'm not going to be too far off there. And your bottom rate, you don't start paying taxes until somewhere around 20,000. So, I mean, you've already paid some level of taxes up to there, but you don't pay a federal income tax until somewhere around 20,000. So it ratchets up between 0 and 25% as you make more and more money. On the corporate side, though, so the left always talks about making that even more progressive, raising that from 0 to 50% or 0 to even 75% if you're talking about AOC. But if you move over and see that the left also talks about raising the corporate tax rate, where that's interesting is that it's a regressive tax, because since I'm taxing the labor, I'm actually going to end up putting more taxes on the lower end of the employment than even on the high end. So what you end up having is the left on one hand talks about having a progressive tax system, but then they are pushing for policies that are some of the most regressive taxes you can have. And then to come back to the progressive tax system that you were asking about, yes, a worker that makes, let's call it $30,000 a year, pays a lower amount of taxes or even a lower tax rate than somebody who makes, say, $200,000 a year. But the rate that they're paying is the person that makes less pays a lower tax rate than the person on the high end. But here's where it gets interesting, and I guess that this is the hard jump to make. So that is a true statement if we're talking about like a dentist or a doctor. But when we start talking about CEOs, what we get into are stock options. And we start getting into a different area of income, which is actually more asset-based. And so the question then is, on capital gains, which is what some of, like a Bill Gates is really making more money off capital gains, and an Elon Musk is making more money off capital gains, that is taxed at a lower amount, and that's actually taxed at about the same amount that somebody making $30,000 a year is paying. And so the question is, should that happen? And I agree that that should happen, because the incentive is for an Elon Musk or a Bill Gates to leave their money in the banks or in the economy so that it can actually be loaned back out. Because if the taxes are higher, they have more of an incentive to pull that basically out of the economy, pull it out of the tax and investment out of the banking and investment system, so it doesn't produce as much value for the economy. So if we're going to have these rich people, uber rich, uber wealthy, it's nice to be able to have a tax system that incentivizes them to invest it back through the economy. So, yes, somebody making $200,000 or more in a job where they actually get a paycheck that is all of their income does pay a higher rate. We can discuss whether that rate is high enough. But once we get to the uber wealthy that are making a lot of money on capital gains, that is back down to the lower rate that is about even with those workers. But that should stay there. I think it's good for the economy overall.
Well, the thing is, too, Charles, is that, you know, these guys are also protected by the big corporation, which gets major amounts of write-offs, and people are always complaining, how come these corporations don't pay all that amount of money? Well, it's because they get more write-offs than the average individual who's just filing and not filing a Schedule C. So this is one of the reasons why I've been advocating for people to come up with something creative and form their own LLC so they could take advantage of the same kinds of things that the corporate world is taking advantage of, and they can actually help the economy and grow the economy that way by being self-employed, because we lost so many of the small businesses in the COVID lockdown. So that's, you know, I guess food for thought, but we appreciate you being on the phone. Thank you, all of you callers. We are coming to the end of the show. Charles Sauer, once again, if you want to go to marketinstitute.org, it's there. That's his website, and he's got podcasts, videos, and all sorts of other good information on there for you. And I'm sure you can email him through the Institute in that regard if you have any further questions. Once again, Charles, thanks so much for coming to the Power Hour. We'd like to have you back on again soon as a regular. We appreciate you.
Great. Thank you much. Thank you too.
You bet. All right. So there you have it, folks. We are nearing the end of our program. I just want to let you know that if you have not had a chance to subscribe, you need to do this. We just want to let you know, too, this thing about the snake oil. There's some things on here, too, that we're going to give you on the email in blast of video. Patrick Wood has come out against Brian Artis's appearance with Stu Peters on this thing that, you know, all the stuff is full of snake oil. The virus is all snake oil based. You need to listen to some of this stuff. It's pretty crazy out there. We just want to also let you know about a lot of the things having to do with Fauci's emails and the teachers unions, other foes, meaning liberal parents. You know, there's a lot of good stuff coming to you on your email blast. We want you to sign up for that. Do that so you don't miss a thing here on the Power Hour. Until tomorrow, we appreciate all of you signing off. Dave Krieger with you. God bless you, and God bless the United States of America.
Heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.